Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. Today on our Ideas Matter segment, we'll check in with the Mass Humanities to discuss an online humanities resource, the American Antiquarian Society's new collection exhibit, the Isaiah Thomas Broadside Ballad Project, or as Thomas called it, Verses in Vogue with the Vulgar. We are joined by Molly Hardy, ACLS Public Fellow and Digital Humanities Curator at the American Antiquarian Society in Worcester, Massachusetts, and Project Manager of the Isaiah Thomas Broadside Ballad Project. Molly, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
Very nice to have you with us. Pauline Boricius joins us as well. She's Director of Grants and Programs for Mass Humanities. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, Pauline.
Good morning, Joe.
Pauline, of course, as a Director of Grants and Programs for Mass Humanities, helping explore this online collection of popular music materials from the early 1800s, including the use and reuse of popular tunes during the early 19th century, which we learned this week from the Pharrell Williams Marvin Gaye trial outcome would be seen as plagiarism today. So some interesting things to discuss. And again, we welcome you both back to the program. So, Pauline, let us begin with you. Why did you bring this particular, did this become a public humanities resource?
Joe, the American Antiquarian Society, I talked about it before, and I said I would be back with someone from there. It is a very large library that houses the largest and most accessible collection of printed materials basically from first contact through 1876 in what was then British America, now the U.S., West Indies, and parts of Canada. And part of what they have, or a lot of what they have, are what we call ephemera. That is popular literature and culture, stuff that is printed for short-term consumption. So if you want to see an 18th century pamphlet advertising a show or an event, the American Antiquarian Society is the place to look. And it's a place where people love to go to do research. It's really a place where scholars congregate, and it has programs. But until recently, the place where most of us would see the materials from the American Antiquarian Society was really in the works of these scholars. And that is what is changing, and that's why I'm here with it today. Yesterday, you had someone here on the program who talked about the University of Everywhere.
Yes.
And this is that part of the University of Everywhere that is so rapidly coming into being, and it's all free and available to anyone. And as we talked about before, we all remember when the internet had nothing but Drek on it. And there is so much out there now for people to look and to use. And the American Antiquarian Society is digitizing collections and putting them on the web as resources, not just stuff in a pile that you know what you have to know what you're looking at in order to use it, but as a curated collection with essays that explain what you're looking at and give you context. And they also do a lot of work with teachers, so they know how to do that. And so the one question really becomes, how do we find out about this stuff? You know, how do you know what's all on the internet if you happen to have never heard of the American Antiquarian Society? How would you know to go look at their website? And that is what I see as part of our job as the Humanities Council. So that's why I'm bringing you this. It's wonderful.
It's very, very cool. I'm glad you made the connection to the discussion we had yesterday with Kevin Carey regarding the end of college and that University of Everywhere, because one of the things that he was saying was that if this was going to work, that these resources were going to be online and the days of spending $250 per textbook were over because all this information was already online and available to students that they could use. So, Molly Hardy, we go to you, and as a curator of this American Antiquarian Society in Worcester, tell us a little bit about this project and exactly how it came to be.
Sure. So this project started really in about 1812 when Isaiah Thomas founded the American Antiquarian Society as a place to collect, as Plume mentioned, sort of ephemera or the print history of America, of what was in the British, or by then was the United States, but a lot of colonial history that was being lost. And so part of what he did and part of his genius was to see that it wasn't just, you know, these expensive books that should be preserved, but also more of kind of the print of the common people. And that's exactly what A Broadside Ballad was. It was a very cheap, easy to circulate piece of print. It's just one page. The term broadside was originally a printer's term for the largest sheet that could be printed on one page to pass through a press. So it's a larger sheet than usually a book page. And before 1800, about a fifth of all the imprints in this in what is now the United States were broadsides, because newspapers hadn't taken hold yet. So this was very much sort of the currency, the print currency of the people. And Thomas basically asked Nathaniel Coverley, who was a printer in Boston, to just collect all of the broadsides that he printed for a two-year period from 1812 to 1814. And that's what makes up this collection of over 300 broadsides. And so it's the ballads are, so what we see are often wood blocks and ornaments on a sheet, and then words that people would sing. And there's no musical notation on the broadsides, but we've identified the music for 237 of the 371 musical texts. And so people would know what to sing to these ballads that often, you know, were sort of rewritten with American themes. What was going on with the War of 1812, for example, is a huge theme in them.
Can I jump in for a second? But how were you able to do that? How were you able to identify that?
Well, we had a scholar, a musicologist, have been working with this collection for a couple of decades. And so that's the other great part of this story, is that this was originally conceived of as a three-volume sort of coffee table book. So it would have beautiful images of the broadsides and then sort of explanatory text and sheet music. Well, but the thing is how many people are going to buy a three-volume heavy coffee table book, right? Whereas we realize if we put it online as a web resource, which it now lives at thomasballads.org, then more people can access it, right? And more people can read these essays and learn about how relevant this collection is. So it was one of those projects that started out as a book, but then sort of we realized that it would have so much more, many more people would be able to access it, sort of in the true spirit of the ballads themselves. Many more people would be able to access it if we put it online.
So with that accessibility, who ultimately do you see using this?
I see a very broad number of people. I mean, for one, I have to just say that the ballads themselves are fascinating. Whether you're interested in the history of the period, whether you just like a good rhyme, for example, there's one that begins, "Come all you who delight in frolicsome songs, I'll tell you a story before it be long. 'Twas of a sea captain, a frolicsome spark, who played with a sailor's fair wife in the dark."
Oh, wow.
And then the rest of it is not suited for radio.
Whoa.
But anyhow, so there's...
I want that to be our new theme song.
Yes, exactly. And what we've done on the site is just listed a number of subjects, really, about 100 different subjects that one could use to enter in. So, for example, if you're interested in alcoholism or adultery or, you know, revolutionary history, whatever it may be, you can find the ballads that deal with those subject matters.
When you say that this is, you know, ballads, but as you mentioned, that we're looking at a lot of different things here. We're looking at poetry, we're looking at music, we're looking at art. There's a lot here. And so what we see online, is it a pretty good facsimile of the actual objects?
That's a great question. It is that we give you a number of different options in terms of what you want to be, what sort of resolution you want to be looking at. So you can, if you click, there's a high resolution option for any one of the broadsides. And if you click on that, you're going to see a very large TIFF file, which is a kind of digital file that's incredibly detailed. But also, if you know, for ease of searching, if you prefer to have more of a smaller resolution, then that's what the sort of default option is. But you can always click in. And then the other thing we've done is we've taken individual photographs of all of the woodcuts and all of the ornaments that are on the broadside, so one can see not only you can see them up close, but you can also say, okay, what other broadsides was this particular woodcut used for? So this is a great resource, too, for people who are interested in print history in America, because it's so much work from one print shop over a set period of time. We can sort of trace a lot of the patterns and habits of that print shop through what we see on these ballots.
It's a fascinating project. Very, very cool. And Plun, of course, this is a program that the Mass Humanities has helped fund and support. And does it tie into other things you're doing as well? I mean, are you able to say, oh, if you were here, you may also want to go there?
Well, first of all, I should clarify, we did not fund this.
Okay. You're just bringing it to our attention.
I'm bringing it to your attention as in my role as arbiter of or simply as person who happens to know about this.
Okay.
And like to talk
as
about
a,
it.
As a curator of all cool things that are going on in the Bay State.
One of the things is that on the AAS website, there's also an online magazine of early American history and culture for anyone who's interested in those topics, which was actually started by historian Jill Lepore as a very early online journal. And that really brings us, shows you that people are publishing original work. We're not just talking about scanning work or even digitally publishing work that's also in print. We run a blog, The Public Humanist, and we often have, or with some regularity, have essays on digital humanities. From time to time, we'll be publishing about it.
And I might just add, Joe, too, that if people are interested in other digital exhibitions that we've done based on our collections, that if they go to our website, AmericanAntiquarian.org, and then look at the digital AAS page, we've broken down the different kinds of exhibitions we've done based on what collection it came from.
Yeah.
And so you'll see a lengthy list there. And we just use this new exhibition software, which is quite popular in digital humanities, called Omeka. It's a content management system that we used for this project. And we'll be doing more in the coming year. We've got 10 more exhibitions slated based on our collection. So,
well, you can find out more information by going to our website. We have all the resources up there. It's wamc.org/roundtable. wamc.org/roundtable. Plun, Molly, thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate
it. My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.